I can't help myself, so I talk to my customers about who caught the fish, regardless of whether they've asked the question or not. For me, it's all about information giving and sharing, and if you can tell a story, tell the story.
This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. I'm John Sussman. To gain a doctorate in marine science requires discipline, stamina, and resilience. Enthusiasm consumes the soul of beginning candidates, but that fizz can easily go flat. Most people who undertake a PhD are motivated by the idea of spending many years researching a particular topic. It is passion that motivates them. Paradoxically, to be successful in the seafood industry, either as a catcher, a processor, a retailer, or a cook, similarly requires dedication, commitment, and often working in isolation whilst maintaining enthusiasm for what is one of the most difficult of all foods to handle. It is rare to come across anyone who can traverse between all three areas of academia, research, and commercial operations in seafood. Andy Tobin, principal of Townsville-based Tobin Fishtails, is indeed a unique talent in the seafood industry.
Andrew Tobin, I'm located in Townsville, in far north Queensland. My childhood, I was fortunate enough to live on the Esplanade just behind Moreton Bay. My grandfather and father were keen recreational fishermen. We were keen sailors, and Moreton Bay was my backyard as a kid growing up. So, yeah, I always had a love of the water. When I was on it sailing or in it chasing fish, I guess that first introduction to fish and seafood was from my father and my grandfather. My mum at that time, so sort of late 70s, she was fortunate enough to be teaching some kids of the families that ran the lighthouse on Lady Elliot at the southern end of the GBR, and we used to go up there on holiday at times. This was well before there was any development of the island, and see up there and snorkel our little hearts out and enjoy the marine environment and the fish, obviously. Early on, fish was always a big part of my life.
Fishery scientists assess and monitor fish populations to determine ecological and economic health of the marine environment, as well as to determine what are the most suitable harvest rates of various species. The depth of investigations can be intense, and the findings can sometimes end up in a mute report. But when good science prevails, the results are as inspiring as they are valuable, guiding commercial fishers and fisheries managers alike.
Initially, when I left school, I was keen on doing marine science, and conversations with my mum actually sort of swayed me out of it a little bit. I was also interested in more general biology and genetic engineering and things like that at the time. And I actually went to UQ and did a few years there before I realised that sort of lab environment of that work profession wasn't for me. Still loving fish and seafood, so I applied to move to Townsville and do some postgrad work in Townsville at James Cook Uni, and so moved up here in the early 90s, and within a few weeks of being here, I was fortunate enough to land some part-time work while I was studying, but part-time work doing some fisheries observer work, and that was my first real raw introduction to the commercial fishing sector, going out and working with fishermen and observing what they were catching, measuring things, collecting things, and just loved it from the get-go. I initially came up as a master's student fell in with a couple of great supervisors that encouraged me to work on some estuarine fish, mostly the black bream in North Queensland, Acanthropagus birda. It's not a commercial species. It's not caught in big enough volumes to be a commercial species, but a very important wreck species. At the time, there was very little known about it. So I ended up my PhD project focused on the sort of the fisheries management implications of this tropical black bream, so defining the biology and some of its ecological characteristics. So, yeah, I spent 3 or 4 years wandering around estuaries in North Queensland, catching and tagging bream and aging them, and working out that they are yet another sex-changing animal. It was a great project, and it gave me a great introduction into the fisheries science field. And finished that in late 97, early 98. But all that time, that 4 or 5 years that I was working on that project, I was doing bits and pieces on the side, part-time contract work with the fisheries department and other things just to pay my way through that, through those years at the uni. So, it was great years, really good years.
Often, marine scientists will find themselves at odds with commercial fishers, many of whom are suspicious of the intentions of the findings of the scientists and what that'll result in, fearing that they may mean restrictions in where and when they can catch fish. Being able to take the commercial fishers on the investigative journey is as much an art as it is a science. For Andy, it was not as much moving from gamekeeper to hunter as using his scientific knowledge and exposure to commercial fishing that sparked his interest in being part of the supply chain for premium quality seafood.
I found very quickly that working with commercial fishermen, getting them on site, oftentimes as a researcher, if you're in that research space, there's a little bit of reluctancy from the commercial fishermen about the intentions of the researcher or your intentions as a person. So, which is fair enough. There can be a little bit of, particularly back in the day, a bit of caution about what the research will mean in the end. But I did find early on that if I tried to embed myself within their operation as much as I could, and become another deckie, so to speak, after I completed the work that I needed to do, then jump in and help skin, bone, fish, pack boxes, whatever. And to help me do that, I thought, well, maybe I'll just get my – at the time there was an assistant commercial fisher's license that you needed – was the first thing you needed to get when you entered the commercial fishing world. So I applied for that and got my assistant commercial fisher's license. So then I was legally able to help fishermen while I was out with them, and it was sort of – good free labour for them, and I learnt a hell of a lot working with a lot of different fishermen in a lot of different places, chasing a lot of different things, and you get to really admire the knowledge and the skills, and I've always loved being on the water. So it was a real nice little marriage there for me. Once I'd finished my PhD, I was offered a 3-year contract working with Fisheries Queensland on a net fishing project that was looking at understanding issues around bycatch in the tropical and subtropical gill net fisheries. This is back in the day when you can imagine there was a lot of, there is still occasionally a bit of misinformation around, but gill nets were very commonly called walls of death, indiscriminate killers and all sorts of things. But as we know, they can be used very selectively and very responsibly. But this project was put in place to define those bycatch characteristics early on in the Barra fishery. So I worked for three years on that project, and then did a couple of smaller projects after that. So probably from memory, 5, maybe 6 years working in the research space. And while that was satisfying to a degree, putting, defining good information and good knowledge for the better management of fisheries going forward, oftentimes, as we all know, politics gets in the way of good decisions around natural resource management. And that's no fun. I found that really... really off-putting in many ways, particularly like a 3-year project. You spend a lot of taxpayer, a lot of fishermen's funds. You develop relationships with various stakeholders, and you get to the end of the game and you go, well, okay, this is what we found and this is the best way forward. And then politics gets in the way. It's, well, what did we do that for? And so at that point, I'd been talking with my wife on and off over the years because she also completed a PhD at James Cook, and we were sort of working in the same space. Renee's more social science orientated than me being more biology, ecology, but we'd talked on and off about me going fishing. And in 2002, we bought our first license, and in 2003, I was fishing full time. Yeah, it was very interesting. I'd learned a lot in the preceding years working with fishermen, so I wasn't a complete greenie. But I went into, like a lot of small scale commercial fishermen, I like my own time. So it was a nice way to satisfy. I almost call it selfish when I describe it to others. You know, you're getting out there and getting away from everything. But yeah, I had a lot to learn, John. I made a few mistakes, as you do, and you learn quickly, otherwise you sink and drown.
In Queensland, commercial fisheries extend throughout tidal waters, from river estuaries to the Queensland East Coast offshore boundary near the edge of the continental shelf. They operate from the New South Wales border in the southeast of Queensland to the Gulf of Carpentaria. Commercial fishers need to be agile, responsive to seasons, conditions, and able to move between species, fishing gear, and market demands.
So I adopted the classic, at least for tropical Queensland, the classic diversified operation, which meant that for the first half of the year, I was net fishing for barramundi and crabbing for mud crab. And then in the second half of the year, I'd change over to line fishing. I'd line fish for Spanish mackerel and reef fish. So that allowed me to target things at the times when they were when it was most economically viable, and also to spread that effort around a little bit. If the barra season was poor, hopefully the mud crab would be a bit better. But that works. That business structure has worked really well for a long time in North Queensland. Unfortunately, with management reform ongoing over the years, that sort of diversification in businesses is becoming harder and harder, which is a real shame. No, I loved it all. I think that was part of the trick to it to a degree. I think if I did the same thing every day, like I know and worked beside fishermen that were nothing but crabbers, so they'd crab every day or every second day, and that's all they did year in, year out. And I know there's fishermen all around the place that do that sort of thing, are very focused on what they do, and I guess there's rewards to that in a way. But I really enjoyed the challenge of being able to diversify and doing different things. That was definitely a driver for me. And still is. I'm not sure if I get restless doing the same thing all the time, but I certainly enjoy switching it up.
The extended supply chain in the seafood industry can often result in the catches of the best and worst fishermen being mixed. It's not only the commercial rewards which are averaged, but for the proud catcher of premium fish, a loss of identity. For a fisherman, taking charge of your own distribution is fraught with complexity. Taking a catch all the way through to a ready-to-eat meal can be as daunting as it is complex. Cooking good fish and chips requires skill. People think that it's just a matter of putting a piece of fish through a batter and into a fryer, but there's so much more. To deliver a truly great eating experience requires as much discipline and dedication as a doctorate in marine sciences.
Early on, I sold to one of the major wholesalers in Townsville here, and this is one of my first tastes of one of the challenges in that wholesale space that your podcast and people who've joined your podcast have explained very well numerous times previously that doing a very good product, you need to be rewarded for it. And if you're not, then that's a problem. And I was fishing in a space where I knew my product was better than some, most eventually. And I wanted to be rewarded for it. So initially I just sold to the local wholesalers, shopped myself around a little bit if I wasn't happy with the prices, and, tried to make the best money from the best quality fish I could provide. After 6 years of fishing full time with my wife Renee, juggling a job at uni and two young kids, I stepped back out of fishing for 5 years and went back to research from about 2009 to 2013, somewhere in that window. And at that point, I was headhunted to go back and do a couple of projects that were struggling. And it was a good move for us in a way, but to help balance the family demands a bit better. But yeah, in that 2013-2014 period, there was big change happening in the way that research was done. Big changes happening in the availability of research funds, and Renee and I decided we didn't like it. We were not enjoying that research space yet again. We looked for options of getting out, and one of them was to buy a little fish and chip shop and see what we could do in that space. And there was a few things that motivated that. We enjoy the simplicity of the presentation of seafood in fish and chips, particularly when it's done well. A lot of people can do it very badly. But during that time when I was fishing full time, occasionally I'd bump into people that had bought some of my product through one of the wholesale retail outlets that I'd sold to. And when you get that direct interaction with your end user or your consumer, it's really good for your ego, to say it simply. It really is, because that's what a lot of fishermen are out there doing. Yes, they love the water. Yes, they love catching things. But they also, oftentimes, that forgotten element that they do like to feed people, that they're proud of what they do. So there was that. So in working with various fishermen over the years, and this is both for me and for Renee, we met a lot of fishermen that were keen and hungry for that recognition within the community. And we saw that as a bit of a missing link. So with the fish and chip shop, we thought, and again, by no means the first people to do this, a lot of people do it, but trying to pick up that provenance story and find really good product from really good fishermen and sell that story, sell the product and sell the story of the fishermen to the consumers. We started that, and we're almost 7 years into that business now, and it's turned into a very successful and very strong little business.
The seafood business, in all its diversity, can throw up hurdles like no other industry. Resilience, an ability to transform and innovate, and a relentless self-belief are as important a trait as having strong financial backing or a willing partner.
Like anyone that embarks on a really different, small business journey, yeah, lots of hurdles, lots of stumbling, falling over flat on our face and pick ourselves up again and start again. I guess the advantage for us was, I guess, both coming from science, we have particularly inquisitive minds and particularly around experimenting, you know, what type of oil to use, what temperatures, how best to cook the fish. So in those initial years, we did a lot of experimentation. We did a lot of exploring. Anytime we travel, we go to other fish and chip shops and see what other people do, what they use, how they handle their product. And I remember I'd driven down to an hour south to pick up some barra one day. I was coming back early in the morning when I first heard that we'd won one of the first award we won was just a small towns or local competition, but it was just such a lovely thing, because it was recognition that we were on the right track, because you're always second guessing yourself. And it took quite a few years for it to become a fully financially rewarding business. As we stepped out of research into this space, we both said that, you know, we want this to be a successful and strong enough business that it can replicate our previous financial stability. You know, we didn't want to take a step back in that space. So, yeah, once we got to that point, that was very satisfying. It was very satisfying. It grows every year. We did well through COVID, and we carry a little bit of guilt with that. We know a lot of people that struggled through COVID, but given we were fast food, or we are fast food, we were still able to operate and serve. We lost staff and had those challenges around that aspect of managing the business. But no, it just keeps getting keeps getting better. It's small. We have ideas of replicating it, but we're quite content with where we're at the moment, John.
The opportunity to get fresh, quality seafood can be a challenge for those who live in the country, particularly in a state as big and broad as Queensland. Selling seafoods in the regions can also be a challenge. It's not often that operators in the seafood industry horizontally as well as vertically integrate their businesses. For the Tobins, this was much an opportunity spawned by chance as by design, but has resulted in a successful extension of their operations.
So this opportunity came up a few years ago. I was fishing full-time through 4 or 5 years ago for a period, back on the boat and fishing, and while the shop was doing well, there was a period where we were really battling with staffing issues, and this Western retail truck business came up for sale. Jim and Viv Petey, some dear old friends, built it over the years. I've known them for 25 odd years now. Many years ago, when I was fishing by myself, either out the reef or up the creek, if I ever bumped into Jim and Viv, then invite me over for dinner and a few home brews. And but they set up this business. It was 13 years old when we bought it, almost 4 years ago now. And it's just a mobile retail. We do 32 towns in the central West Queensland. It takes a couple of weeks to get around the track, about 3,500 kilometres. And Jim and Viv were ready to get out. They'd done their time, set up a very successful business. And coming back to the shop challenges, thought, maybe we sell the shop and buy the truck and just try and manage those dramas around staff a little bit better, because the truck is basically a one-man show, two-man show at best. Don't have any staff to rely on. But so we bought the truck and nobody bought the shop. And it keeps getting better. So now we're juggling all three. But the truck is it's Western Queensland, as anywhere in Australia, but certainly when you get away from the coast, it's a great place to do business. Customers are always happy to see you. Yeah, everyone's all smiles. We move every day, so it's not. It you've got that novelty within the business as well. So, depending on how the roads clear, I hope to head off tomorrow on the next trip, and that'll be an 18-day trip. We'll see how we go. We'd like to bring one down to Brisbane and one down to Sydney, but we're I don't know if we'll get the staff to get down there at the moment. But I'd love to see what we could do in one of those bigger city centres, and we often get customers from down south telling us that we should move down. Maybe one day, John, maybe one day.
The modern consumer is hungry to know where, when and how their food comes from. There is a bounty of amazing stories that sit behind the supply of seafood, with some of the most fascinating and exciting yarns in the food business to be found in the seafood category. For Andy Tobin, the opportunity to tell the story of his catch is as much a part of the job as catching itself.
I can't help myself, so I talk to my customers about who caught the fish, regardless of whether they've asked the question or not. So I'll name the product, name the fish, and name the location. If I don't know, I'll let them know. And, for me, it's all about information giving and sharing. And if you can tell a story, tell the story. And I think, some of the fishes products that we deal with probably don't even realise I do that. But that's part of what I think is very important about, and what Renee thinks as well, what she does through the shop. I just think it's a very important part of, providing food for people is we're going to tell you the story behind it, whether you like it or not. I think in most cases, people really appreciate that. I guess the biggest love at the moment is that we're dealing with seafood in the seafood community, but then that's pumped up even more by dealing with the end consumer. Really enjoy that. I hate things being lost in the wholesale chain. There's no fun in that. And I think going forward, I think from my only frustrations, or our only frustrations at the moment going forward, is that I think a lot of the niche fisheries, the smaller fisheries around Australia, particularly the tropical, more diversified ones, have become over-regulated, and we're going to lose access to product and access to the productivity of the systems that we've got here in Australia because of over-regulation. And I think that's a real problem. And it doesn't make me feel very good at all, particularly being in the science space and trying to get better things done. It won't mean we'll lose complete access. I don't. That's not a. It's not the end of the road, so to speak. It's. But yeah, we've become a little bit too over clever with the way that we're managing things.
Whilst there are many stories of despair across the seafood industry, there are also many that are inspiring. The never-ending search by the Tobins to do better and to tell the story of why what they do is good is one such story, and confirms that the Australian seafood industry remains one of the most progressive in the world. This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. A Deep in the Weeds production, I'm John Sussman. Follow us on Instagram at Fishtails Seafood Podcast, or email us at fishtailspodcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay tuned for more tales from beneath the surface of the seafood world every Friday on your podcast app.